Okay, in the eighth shir, the eighth sicha, from our Rebbe over here, Rabbi Hoffman, he continues the conversation about self-awareness, how one comes to learn about themselves, comes to know themselves, and he's going to focus only on one person, and that is Rav Isaac Sher. The whole chapter here are stories, lessons, ideas that he heard from his Rebbe, Rav Isaac Sher, the Roshiva of Slobodka, that taught him, that taught Rav Shlomo Hoffman, how to learn about himself and how to become self-aware. Now, again, we're looking at a Rebbe, we're looking at a figure that's supposed to teach us, and if we remember from a few weeks ago, the beautiful line that the Rosh Yeshiva is not a Shulchan Aruch. Everybody remembers that that line, that you have to think with your head. So, after that, after we spoke about that, so there was a number of questions. How does that fit within the world of, you know, Hasidus, they have a Rebbe, and in, let's say in the more, you know, Haredi Yeshivish world, they have Das Torah. How does that fit within that purview? So I, Baruch Hashem, I've been able to communicate a bit with the editor of this series, Rabbi Meir Simcha Stein. So I sent him a question. I said, how would you explain this according to what Hoffman says? So I'm going to read to you his response to me. It came the other day. It didn't come early because he was in the middle of moving and he didn't check his mail. Whatever happened, that's what he told me. So he said, he says a very interesting approach. He says, Hamilim halalu ne'amru al-dei Rosh Shlomo b'shem Rav Isaac. He says, that expression, the Rebbe Rosh Shiva is not a Shulchan Aruch, is what I heard from Rosh Shlomo named Rav Isaac. V'kimalnu kama v'kama ha'aros al-hanal. And he said, I received many, many comments about that statement. V'rabbanei ha-sefer ha'oru l'hashmit kisuv zeh v'peas kotzer ha-masig sh'anoshim chas v'sham yizalzu b'Shulchan Aruch. And in fact, he said, some Rabbanim said we should leave it out because it would leave people to perhaps know, be mezalzel, to not respect the Shulchan Aruch, Rosh Yeshiva, whatever it may be. The inyan ha-chasidim, ein malanos kizeh ikar chinucham. He says, regarding chasidus, I can't speak to it because that's their shita, and I can't comment on the way they function. Rosh Shlomo amar pa'amayim rabos, b'shem Rav Isaac. Rosh Shlomo said many times, name Rav Isaac Sher. She'etzleinu ba'olam ha-yeshivas ha-litios, in the Lithuanian yeshivas, chinchu kol echel yos gadol, to everyone is educated to become their own gadol. The Lashon Rav Yisrael Bigros Shekol Echad Tzarech Lios Dayan Asmo, in the name of Yisrael Salanter, who said every single Jew should be his own judge. You should be your own person. Lachria Sveikos B'chol Yom V'Yom, in order to be able to answer your own questions every single day, to be able to have enough of an intellect and a backbone to make your own decisions. The Yeshivas Halitiyos, in Lithuanian Yeshivas, Chinchu Es HaBachurim Levakeres Arbosehem. We are educated, the Yeshiva Bachurim, to push, to challenge their Rebbeim. V'chein haya b'chevron, this is what I saw in Chevron, Shiro, b'zeh Maila, this is a great thing. V'lo chulsh, it's not a lack in challenging. Ki zeh ha-kli si'ito sh'hadam miskaber v'gadol. Because challenging and pushing is how you grow. V'ha-katnas ha-das b'slobodka. Limiting your das, limiting your mind, in the world of slobodka, ha'isa me'chata'im ha-gadolim, was one of the greatest things you could do, is to not use your brain. U'kishiyavo la'asid lavo, b'shamayim, and in the future when you come to Shemayim, ha'ona shachi gadol, the greatest punishment you will get, ya'alzeh shelo hishtameshes b'seichel shenasati lecha. Hashem will punish you for not using the brain that he gave you. Kach bore olam yagid adam. That's what Hashem will say. Madua hashchasas hasaseicha. Why did you ruin your intellect? Shazeh hamatana hachi gadola, the greatest gift that I gave, shekibalti mimenu. How could you not use your brain that I gave you? Rav Isaac Amar, Gam Shemuz, he also said a Shemuz, V'gam Ba'ofen Yishi, the Rosh Shlomo, and he also told him personally, Ma Gavul shall be Kores. What is the border? So how far can you push? How much are you allowed to challenge? Ad Heichan Mutta Levakeres HaRav, how long can you push your Rebbe? U'matai Zeh Kvar Nikra Chutzpah, and when does it cross into the line of Chutzpah? Hevi as HaGemar B'Brachos, the Gemar in Brachos says, Tachlis Chachma Shalo Yiva'et B'Rabosav. The purpose of Chacham is not to kick, is not to reject your teachers. Im kvar magia lematzav shechoshev shehareba dafuk v'aniya tamid yoser chacham mehareba ze simen shu pagum. When you get to a point where the teacher is a nebach and you think that you know more, that you are better than the teacher, that is a problem. Aval kol zman sheyadua ha-hierarchy, as long as you know the order, shehareba hu hareba, that the teacher is the teacher, v'atalmid hu atalmid, and the student is the student, v'tamid yamshich v'yaneg me'areba, and you're there to take, and you're there to grow, and you grow to nurture from the teacher, asayhu misalu hatov, you're on the right path, v'yesh laharchiv, and there's more to say about this, he says, but he doesn't want to say about it, apparently. He ends the letter, and that's how he explains it. I think that's a very good definition. It gives us a lot of insight to that very important concept about where is that line between pushing and chutzpah, and how to manage that. Okay? Questions on that? No, that's only because this is running. That's why there's no questions. Okay, so let's begin. Rav Isaac Sher, based on his mussar and his chinuch and his insight, would talk about educating, and he was not into that's usser, you're going to go to Gehenna. It's about using your brain, as we just said, and it's about being open with yourself, open with others, that it's normal to struggle, it's normal to fail, it's normal to have a yitzhara. So let's begin. Example number one. He's going to go through 8 lessons that he heard from Rav Isaac Sher. The first is regarding his list of Kabbalas on Erev Rosh Hashanah. One Erev Rosh Hashanah, he asked Rav Hoffman, did you make any Kabbalas? Did you take upon yourself anything for the new year? And Rav Hoffman said, yes, I did. And then he said, can I see it? Can I see the list of things that you wrote down? Can you imagine such a thing? That you made Kabbalas and you showed it to your teacher, showed it to your parents, all your personal things. And he said, sure, you can see it. So he asked him, are these things that you checked that you were sure that you'd be able to do? And he said, why? Because making a Kabbalah means that you take upon yourself things that you have succeeded in the past. You don't take upon yourself things that you have not seen any success in going forward. Because only after being at ease and feeling successful with such a Kabbalah can you then take it upon yourself. So Rav Isaac Sher took the page of Kabbalahs that Rabbi Hoffman wrote and he tore it into shreds and he said, start again. Start again. When you make Kabbalahs and you take things upon yourself, it needs to be in the realm of success. Things that you know that you could do. To talk about things that you have no chance or don't even know about, why would you accept upon yourself such a thing? The person will say, I'm going to have kavana for every single bracha in Shemoneh Esrei starting this coming Rosh Hashanah. Have you had kavana for one bracha in Shemoneh Esrei? Now you're going to do all 19 brachas? You need to pick things that are in the realm of success. Make kabbalas that are small, realistic for your abilities, not fantasies. It's not making kabbalas are not times to dream big. And have like big hasagos. It has to be matim to your kochas and nefesh. And obviously, this is the importance of knowing yourself. You have to know yourself and what you're capable of. Number two, one day they were learning together, and Rav Isaac Sher asked Rabbi Hoffman if you could do something for him. I need you to do me a favor. Could you take care of this thing? So Rabbi Hoffman said, yes, not a problem. I'll take care of it. So 15 minutes later, Rabbi Sher asked him again, are you sure that you have the ability to do what I ask you to do? And he said, yeah, 100% I can do it. So Rabbi Sher said, let's shake on it. Okay? Let's shake on it. So Rabbi Hoffman said, okay, that's weird, but I'll do it. And he put out his hand to shake his hand to shake that he was going to do it. So Rabbi Sher didn't put his hand out. So Rabbi Hoffman said, we're supposed to shake on it. So Rabbi Sher told him, he said, why did you stick out your hand? So Rabbi Hoffman said, I stuck out my hand because the Roshiva asked me to shake on it, that I could make sure to do what he asked me to do. So he said to him, how can you shake on something if you don't know for sure if you can do it, if you think you can do it? You should have said, Kvod Rosh Yeshiva, I'm afraid, I don't know if I can do it. You have to know your ability. You cannot shake on something. You can't guarantee something if you don't know for sure it's within your ability to do it. Again, coming back to the yesod of knowing yourself, knowing your Yitzhara, like we spoke last week, going on a date with your Yitzhara and getting to know what you're capable of. Number three, when he was younger, Rabbi Hoffman would learn Sifrei Maharal, philosophical works, very, very lofty Jewish philosophy. And he knew that his Rebbe, Rabbi Sher, was not into that stuff. He did not learn philosophical texts, did not learn big Sfarim on Machshava, and he preferred Sifrei Musar, working on Midos, or Chosadika, Misil Susharim, Rabbi Sol Salanter. He preferred those types of texts. So Rabbi Hoffman asked Rabbi Sher, why is it that you still focus on Tikkun HaMidos, Sifrei Musar in your old age? Meaning you're already 60s, 70s, 80s. You know, why are you still working on these things? Go on to big ideas, Chassidus, Rav Tzadok, Maharal. You know, what about like big, big Sfarim with big, big complicated ideas? Why are you still working on this small stuff? So Rabbi Sher began to cry. He began to cry when he asked him that question. And he said, how far this generation has fallen, that they feel they don't need to work on themselves even when you get older. They think that working on yourself is the only thing you do when you're young and you have time and you're more excited. And he says, in truth, every age and every stage has work that has to be done on learning about themselves and their kochos nefesh. And he explained that Gedol Yisrael understood that there's nothing as great for a Jew as is controlling your yetzer and not losing control. The greatest thing you can do for yourself is to control yourself and to be in the driver's seat and not to be controlled by other things. And Rabbi Hoffman asked Rabbi Sher, why you continue to learn with me then, if you think that I'm such a nebuch, and I'm never going to become a great Baal Musar, and you think that like I'm so lowly, so why do you learn with me? So Rabbi Sher said, because at least I know from the amount that we've learned together, that it's true, you're not yet a Baal Musar, but I was successful in turning you not into a wild animal. I know that at least you have some control. So that's why I continue to learn with you, and I know you'll continue to grow. And he told the following story. The Reb Leib Chassman, who was the Rosh Yeshiva in Hebron, was once at a gathering of Rabbanim in Yerushalayim in 1936. They were having important debates and discussions until one of the senior Rabbanim, now he doesn't say who it was, I have an idea who it was, but I'm not going to say who it was. He says that one of the senior Rabbanim at that meeting got up and he said the following. The debates were going back and forth, it was very heated, didn't know what to do. And he said, I am much older than everybody here, I have no more personal interests, and this is my opinion on the matter, so let's stop debating, simply accept my opinion, and let's move on. That's what he said to the room. So Reb Leib Chassman stood up and said, it is true that you are the oldest here, and you are very, very chashuv, and a very accomplished Talmid Chacham. But Chazal tell us, kol ha-gadol mechaveiro, yetzer gadol mimenu. The biggest gadol has the biggest yetzer hara, right? And therefore, your yetzer hara is much worse than all of ours. And Reb Leib Chassman got up and he walked out. And he said, I'm not going to hear what this person has to say. Because a person to get up and say, I'm older, I know more, and therefore you should accept my opinion, is a silly thing. Because the Gemara says, the older and the bigger and the more accomplished you are, it means the bigger Yetzer Hara you have. So don't tell me, said Reb Leib Chassman, that therefore you have no negius. You have no personal investing in anything. That's not true. The Gemara tells us, the bigger you are, the bigger Yetzer Hara you have to deal with at the end of the day. Good. Number three. And that was about the importance of studying Musar even when you're older. Number four. Until Reb Hoffman was in his early 20s, he was very serious, he says about himself. He was trying to be a tzaddik, trying to be, focused on the right things, here a shemayim, and he rarely smiled. Well, in this picture he's not. There are other pictures of him smiling. But he rarely smiled when he was younger. And Rav Sher asked him why he never smiled. Rav Hoffman said, I never really noticed that I didn't smile before. I never really paid attention to it. So Sher told him, you should really go look in the mirror once in a while because your face seems to be very serious all the time and it's very hard to look at because you don't smile at anything and it could be upsetting to other people. So Rabbi Hoffman turned to his Rebbe and said with a bit of chutzpah, where in Shulchan Aruch does it say he needs to look in the mirror? Why do I have to look in the mirror? Leave me alone. This is the way my face is when I'm resting, this is the way I am. So Rabbi Sher said, go get me a chumash. And he opened up to Parshas Bereishis. Everyone sees the pasuk in front of you. V'al Kayin v'al Minchasa lo shah. To Kayin and his gift, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not receive favorably. V'yichar Kayin ma'od. And Kayin got very upset. V'yiplo panav. And his face fell. He had a saddened expression on his face. V'yomer Hashem al Kayin. Hashem said to Kayin, Lama charalach v'lama naflu fanacha. Why are you upset? And what's with that sad look on your face? So said Rabbi Hoffman, you don't have the face of a murderer, that's not what I'm telling you. But we see that a Kadosh Baruch Hu asked Kayin why his face was so sad. So how is Kayin supposed to answer that question, right? Kayin has a sad face. A Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Kayin, why is your face so sad? So what? How is Kayin supposed to know how his face looks? What's the answer? He should have looked in a mirror. Right? You should have been conscious how you present yourself in public and you smile and you present yourself in a pleasant way. By looking in a mirror and knowing how you're presenting yourself to the public is a mitzvah from Hashem. Hashem demands it of Kayin that he should be aware of what his face looks like when it's in public. Now, let's keep in mind, at that time in the world, there's only four people. So only three people are going to see Kayin's face. So for the three people in the world, and the giraffes and the zebras and the fish and the birds, so he wanted to make sure that his face was pleasant. He spent a lot of time with Rabbi Hoffman, training him to smile, saying things like, your face is a bor b'rishus harabim. What does that mean? Your face, a bor b'rishus harabim, is like a dangerous thing in public that people could slip on and fall into or get hurt. Because it's harmful to other people. When people see your face like that, it's going to ruin your day. Because your face looks miserable, they're going to be like, why is he in such a bad mood? I don't know, maybe I should be in a bad mood. And the whole world's going to be ruined. So you got to smile, and you have to be in a pleasant way when you greet people. One Erev Rosh Hashanah, he told Rabbi Hoffman to take a Kabbalah in Chesed. You should take upon yourself something you should be able to do in the realm of Chesed. So Rabbi Hoffman asked him, why in Slobodka are you constantly pushing Yeshiva Bachram to do Chesed? The Bachram don't have any money. What are we supposed to spend money on? We barely have any money. It's Yerushalayim, you know, Bnei Brak in the 50s and the 60s. Everybody's poor. Like, how am I supposed to do Chesed? I don't have any money. So Rabbi Sher said, no. You think that Chesed means I have to have a lot of money. I have to write a big check. I have to get a lot of tzedakah on Purim. That makes me a Baal Chesed. Rabbi Sher said, when I was learning in Slobodka as a young man, I wanted to do Chesed. And I noticed that when people wanted to light up for their cigarettes, they always had to waste time going around looking for matches, getting a match on this one, getting a match on this one, and they wasted a lot of time trying to look for matches. So what did I do? I collected and saved up a few pennies. I went to the store. I bought a few matchboxes, and people knew that they could come to me whenever they needed to light up for their smoke and for their cigarettes. They could come to me, and they'd be able to save time. And that's how I did Chesed. Now, obviously, he did not know then what we know now. Nowadays, that would not be a chesed. That was just my editorial comment. That would not be a chesed to go and give somebody a light for their cigarettes. Don't do that. You should take it away from them and not let them smoke. But at that time, that was a chesed. So he said, I did it. It's not about having a lot of money. You don't have to write big checks and give a lot of, you know, fancy shalach manos and things like that. A chesed comes in small things. So Rav Isaac Sher told Rabbi Hoffman, do you know what your chesed should be? Smile at people and make them feel good with a cheerful face. That's a chesed. And you know what? It doesn't cost a penny. Smile at other people and make them feel good. And Rabbi Sher was very good at getting people to laugh, he said, just as a side point. He said one Rosh Hashanah before Tkiyah Shofar, they had a minion in his house, and he spoke before shofar blowing in a very funny way. He made people laugh. He told a lot of jokes during the speech, trying to give examples, and the examples were very funny. So the next day, second day Rosh Hashanah, two Bachrim who davened there on day number one didn't come back. So Rabbi Sher asked Rabbi Hoffman, what happened to the two Bachram? So Rabbi Hoffman said, those Bachram didn't want to come back and daven here because they felt it was inappropriate that you were making people laugh before shofar blowing on Rosh Hashanah. And they didn't like that, so they went somewhere else. So Rabbi Sher said that you can be serious and you can be happy at the same time. The two are not mutually exclusive. You can be a serious person and a happy person all at the same time. You can go through your day with a serious that is on your face, and also a happiness that coexists at the same time. You can speak and deal with about difficult things, and also have a smile on your face. You can talk to your friend about a serious issue, you can have serious things going on, and also have a pleasant smile. You can talk about what's going on in Ukraine, and you can also have a pleasant smile on your face. It's able to deal with serious topics, and also be pleasant towards other people at the same time. That was number four. Number five. Now, When speaking to Rabbi Hoffman about Kavod, when Rabbi Sher was speaking to Rabbi Hoffman about Kavod, so he asked him the following question. He said to Rabbi Hoffman, is it better for you to be the rabbi of a major city, but everyone in that city is an Amharas? Everybody in the city barely knows anything about Yiddishkeit. They think that you are the biggest gadol in the world, and you're going to teach them Torah, but it's going to be very, very basic things. They're going to stand up for you. They're going to give you so much kavod, but the people there really don't know so much. So in your eyes, maybe you're not so chashiv, but they're going to think you're very chashiv. Or is it better to be a Rosh Kolel with 12 guys in the Kolel, total, max, but they really respect you for your insights in the Gemara, in understanding a Chiddush Rabbi Kiva Eger, in opening up a sugya, they'll be mechabed you just as well. What's a greater form of kavod? So Rabbi Sher said that yeah, it's true they are both kavod, but the question when it comes to kavod is, who is giving it? Every person needs a sense of kavod. Every single person in this room right now needs to have a sense of respect and kavod for themselves. The only issue is how you're going to fill that need of kavod with real kavod or fake kavod. are you going to seek out people whose opinions don't really matter so much of how they think of you? There are people who run from person to person, from place to place, seeking out the kavod and respect of every single person they can find because they need it. And without that sense of kavod, they feel worthless. It's not about in numbers when it comes to kavod. It's about in who's giving it. Do the people in your life who matter have a sense of respect for you? This is not a dating schmooze, but we're just going to say something right now anyway because I know it's relevant to some people. When it comes to the topic of dating, a question that is not unimportant, and this is not from Rabbi Hoffman. When it comes to the question of dating, a question that is not unimportant is do you respect the other person and does he respect you? It's a very important question. If you're at a point and you cannot decide with this other person, is this the right person, is not the right person, a good question is, do I respect him? And does he respect me for who I am? If he doesn't, or you don't towards him, so then maybe it's not going to be a good shidduch. It's not going to be a good match. Because if you don't respect the other person, and you don't have a sense that this person is someone I can look up to, I can hold in regard, so then it's hard to say you're going to go anywhere and something, anything is going to develop. But that's what he's saying over here. When it comes to kavod, it matters who it's from. Who's giving you that kavod? And are you someone who just seeks kavod from everybody, from a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old and some lady you met in the grocery store? Everybody needs to give you kavod and that fulfills your need for kavod? Or do you care about who's giving that kavod at the end of the day? Number 6, Rabbi Sher ran a vad for the top bachrim in Slobodka in the yeshiva. So during the vad, the bachrim would sit and debate Gemara, Musar, and Rabbi Sher would kind of like sit back and watch it happen, and he would, you know, kind of like chime in, no, this is not correct, maybe this, but he would let the Bachram and the Vad argue amongst themselves, and he would kind of just be the ringmaster over this little circus that was going on at his table. So during the Vad, the Bachram would sit and debate, and one of the debates became very heated, where the Bachram were saying that this is certainly what Rabbi Akiva Eger meant. They were discussing the Sugga, and one Bachar said, 100%, this is what Rabbi Akiva Eger means. And the other guy said, no, this is what Rabbi Akiva Eger means. And then they were discussing the sugi and Musar and Hashkafa. And they said, no, this is what Avram Avinu's intention was. No, this is what Avram Avinu's intention was. So right then and there, Rabbi Sher stopped the discussion. And he went around the room, and he asked the people present the following question. Do you know what your grandfather looks like? So some Bachram said, I never met my grandfather, but I saw a picture. Other Bachram said, yeah, I have a good sense. I know what my grandfather looks like. And they had all different types of vague answers. Maybe he looked like this when he was younger. I can't remember really what his glasses look like right now. Are they squared? Are they circle? How tall is he? And some knew more, some knew less. But there's always something that was vague in their description of what their grandfather looked like. Either they met them or they didn't meet them. So then Rav Isaac Shur said, how can you have such confidence what Rabbi Akiva Eger meant when he lived 200 years ago? And how can you have such confidence what Avram Avinu's intentions were when he lived 3,000 years ago? You need tznius when it comes to speak about the thoughts and the intentions of Yishaya Tanakh and Gedol Yisrael. For a Jew living in 2022 to sit back and say, I know this is what such and such rabbi meant, and I know this is what such and such personality in Tanakh intended to do, and I totally understand them, says Rabbi Sher, you need a little bit of modesty. If you can't even remember what your grandfather, your great-grandfather, you know, what shape his glasses were, for sure, then how are you going to say for sure you know what this person who lived so many years before you had to say and what they thought as well? When it comes to talking about Torah personalities, Torah leadership, you have to be careful with a sense of modesty to say, perhaps this is what they meant. Maybe this is with their intention, and not to speak with so much conviction. Okay, number 7. This is about Parnassa. After getting married, Rabbi Hoffman came to Rabbi Sher to ask a question. He worked in a midrashia, in a school, in Pardes Chana, and his wife worked in the office of the Religious Youth Aliyah Department in Bnei Brak. So the question was, should we live in Pardes Chana or live in Bnei Brak? Everyone hears the dilemma here? Good? So Rabbi Sher said that I don't think that it's proper for Rabbi Hoffman, in his specific case, that his wife be the main income in the house. I don't know if that's the best situation. So Rabbi Hoffman said, well, technically, right now, the parnassa I'm making from the midrashiyah is enough to cover our basics for the income and our expenses. And now my new wife can stay home and she doesn't have to go to work if you think that would be best. So Rabbi Sher said, I don't think that's right either, because I don't think it's proper that your wife should stay home bored doing nothing all day. That's not fair to her. So Rabbi Hoffman said to Rabbi Sher, so what should I do then? So Rabbi Sher said, why do I have to break my head for you? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you a brain. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you Seichel. Sit and think about what the best plan for your new family is. I'm just here to raise the issue. Rak basi la'orer. I'm only coming to awaken the problem that you have in front of you. How do you manage this issue where you should be the main breadwinner, your wife shouldn't be bored all day? How can you come with a plan? I'm just here to guide you. But I'm not your brain. I think this ties in beautifully to our opening statement. I'm not your brain. When you come to the person to ask for advice, the person may raise a question about what you were asking about. Are you sure this is the right thing? Is this the right situation for you? Is this going to be the best for you in the future? And I might raise all types of questions about what your plans are. But it's not the advice of the person you're seeking etzah from to now think for you and tell you what to do. You need to break your head. You need to use your seichel. You need to use your kochas nefesh to figure out what to do with that problem. Rabbi Sher taught his talmidim to take achrayas, to take responsibility. And he points out issues, but the person himself has to find his own path and to be his own person. Taking achrayas for yourself is extremely important, and that's part of getting to know yourself and knowing your kochas nefesh. Okay? Ready for the last topic? Has anybody ever seen the Sefer before? Yes, you've seen it before. Have you opened it before? You opened it before also. Okay, good. So, this is the Sefer Cheshbon HaNefesh. The Cheshbon HaNefesh is written by Rav Mendel of Satanov. He is of the Talmidim of the Musar movement. He also is a bit controversial in the fact that he was a maskil. He was a member of the Enlightenment in Poland in the 1800s. The book is also interesting in that it sets up, I think, 12 or 13 different midos that a person should work upon, and there's a setup of how you should go about it, and a chart at the end about how to work on each mida and to make a list for yourself. Cheshbon HaNefesh, make an accounting for yourself. It's a very, very popular work that was supported by Vassal Salanter. It's also interesting in that there's a good chance that the author over here, Rav Mendel Satanov, probably lifted the whole concept from Benjamin Franklin. That's also a good chance. Benjamin Franklin has these 13 things that you should work upon, and he writes about them. And Rav Mendel Satanov probably ripped them off and translated them into Hebrew, and then expands that with some Torah sources. That's also a big theory as well. He was a maskil. He knew about writings of Benjamin Franklin, and that's most likely where it came from. Now, it's a great book, and this is my copy. I recommend it. But for our intents and purposes, the reason we're looking at this is because Rav Isaac Sher, our topic for today, wrote an introduction to the Cheshbon HaNefesh. Okay? He wrote an introduction to this work about why the book is important and why it should be learned. So we're going to learn together from his introduction. Now, I gave you the translation, the Feldheim translation. We're going to learn together about this idea of making a Cheshbon HaNefesh, knowing yourself, and Rav Isaac Sher's comments. Okay? Ready? Let's go. This distinguished work elucidates significant areas of the Musar wisdom, which are not to be found in other works of Musar in our possession. Meaning there's something in here that you don't find in other works. I'd like to draw the reader's attention to two important principles, which are important for those following the Musar discipline. The first principle concerns understanding the process of thought formation. What does that strange expression mean? The process of thought formation. So this, in his language, is Darche Yitziras HaMachshava. That's the words here, Darche Yitziras HaMachshava, or the understanding of your inner kochos and knowing how to use them. So if you needed to translate understanding the process of thought formation, it means knowing your kochos. That's what it means. It is obvious that if a person does not know and recognize his own character, he will find the study of Musar to be of no avail, for he has no idea what he lacks or what he must correct. Meaning, if you don't know yourself, how can you begin to fix and grow? This is something we spoke about last time. Perhaps you'll make matters worse if you start fixing without knowing, right? Perhaps if you don't know how to fix a car and you start working on a broken car, you're going to make it worse and you're not going to be able to fix it anymore going forward. Moreover, even one who recognizes and knows his negative character traits might find the study of Musar to be of no avail, for he cannot undertake to follow the Musar way of life until he fully understands the processes of thought formation and the modes of thought development, meaning until he knows himself. An external awareness of one's character traits cannot be taken as a complete recognition. If you only know in three sentences, I have anger issues, and I really like ice cream, and you know I could be more caring, and that's the extent of how much you know yourself, then it's not enough. It's a bit external. You have to know not just your midos, but the inner mechanism and functioning of how you work. For character traits are the internal expressions of one's soul, which root themselves in one's thoughts and then manifest themselves through one's actions. Hence, complete recognition is predicated on understanding the inner workings of the heart. People often think the Yetzirah acts up because of a machshava, and then you get angry. I have bad thoughts about this person, and then anger comes out. I say something I shouldn't have said. I react in a way that I should not have reacted. But the first step is to think kas, and meaning the first step is to think kas, and the second step is to feel kas. But the opposite is true, says Rabbi Sher. The first is the Yetzer Hara makes you feel kas, you feel angry. And then with that feeling, you begin to think angry. The Rambam in his Shmona Prakim writes about Haseichel Shamesh L'Ratzon. The intellect is actually serving the Ratzon. It's heart first, then brain. Not brain first, then heart. The Ratzon is first, and then the mind begins to work. The Seichel kind of first checks in with your Ratzon to see what's going on. The brain sees there's something going on inside of here, inside your heart. You have feelings and emotion, and the brain's like, what's going on down there? Should I be helping that? Should I be putting that away? And it kind of like tests the water to see how it wants to react. If the person has a feeling in some direction, so your brain will then begin to bring proofs to support your feelings, right? Somebody didn't invite you to something, you weren't invited to some event, so now you feel angry, hurt. So your brain begins to kick in. Oh, they didn't invite me. And do you know what? And their sister and their mother. And do you know what they'd said to me 5 years ago? This person the whole time didn't like me. And your brain starts to develop based on the feeling. Not that your brain tells you how to feel, but the feeling rises up inside from your kochas nefesh, and the brain begins to support and to rationalize how you're feeling. And the seichel can also control and manage in a positive way as well. To supervise our thought formations, which are the sources from which all of man's actions evolve. Well, meaning all of our actions are based on midos, and our inner kochos push us to act. Through these illuminating insights, man can supervise the process of his thought formation, even within the deepest chambers of his heart, weighing each feeling and image from the moment that it enters his consciousness. Meaning a person is able to break everything down into pieces and to slowly see how you feel and move towards those thoughts and actions. When you have a sense of who you are, you can break things down into smaller chunks and begin to analyze, begin to pay attention, beginning to have control, and thereby discern how one's thoughts follow his character traits and desires. He can thus, with God's help, be successful in following the entire Musar discipline. Meaning, if I'm angry at you, then I'm going to have negative thoughts. And if I feel calm about you, then I'll have calm thoughts about you. The Ratzon comes first and it pulls the Machshava along. Your desires come, and then with it comes all the intellectual reasons. And the more you know yourself and what triggers you in different ways, the more control you'll have. It's worthwhile to provide an example of this from the teachings of our sages, the Gemara and Sanhedrin, Sadi Gimel Amid Beis, who revealed the mystery of how the trait of jealousy is created in man's heart. How does the Yetzer Hara work? It's not simply Yetzer Hara equals bad. We have to learn how it functions. What's the case over here? They commented regarding Shaul, who heard David being praised as being greater. As David being greater, in establishing the halacha from the sources, he had a sinking feeling and he envied him. From their words, we can see that the generation of envy is accompanied by a sinking feeling. What do we see here? Shaul was jealous of David, right? We know that. We all know Shaul was jealous of David. But look at what the Gemara says. It doesn't say he was jealous of David. What it says is that he had a sinking feeling and he envied him. This feeling of kavod is what causes kinah. But that's not what it says. Rav Isaac Sher is saying that the chalishas hadas, his sense of feeling less than, his lack of sense of self-esteem, is what caused the jealousy over David. One second. I realize I forgot to print out my last notes for myself, so I'm just going to pull it up over here. One second. Okay. So the question is, again, Shaul has chalishas hadas. He has a sinking feeling, and that leads to his jealousy. So he writes, a fleeting, transitory thought to which man pays little attention, assuming that it is a result of his own distress regarding his inability to establish the halacha from the sources despite his toil in Torah. Shaul began to question, why not me? Why does everybody love David? How come nobody loves me? How come nobody respects me for who I am? Why did David do this and not me? Why did David accomplish this and not me? And with this self-doubt, he began to become jealous of David. If there wouldn't have been the chalishas hadas, if you wouldn't have had the self-doubt first, then there wouldn't have been the jealousy. So the Gemara is telling us that if you know yourself, if you know kochos hanefesh, then you'll be able to cut off the bad meter later on. Meaning, kinah is not the issue here. The issue is self-doubt. If you would have a better sense of self-esteem and you would know yourself better, then you wouldn't have to lead to kinah at the end of the day. And then he says, however, one who is aware of how jealousy develops in the heart understands that if he experiences a sinking feeling when hearing his friend being praised, okay, somebody accomplishes something, a friend of yours does something, a friend of yours gets into a program, is able to grow in a certain area that you would like to as well, and you're not able to. So he had better fortify the musings of his heart with wisdom and knowledge so that he can eradicate the trait of jealousy and purify himself from it. Only can work if you have kochos hanefesh, that you know yourself. So in Lamashal here, when you have this sense of kinah, of envy towards another person, so the answer is not, don't be jealous. That's not a normal human. It's not a normal human reaction. Of course you're going to be jealous. So when you're feeling jealousy towards that person who did that thing that you wanted to do, don't tell yourself, oh, I'm not going to be jealous. Bad. And then shut it down. It's not going to work. We need to go back as beneath the source and go back to the chalishas hadas, that sense about yourself that you feel that you are lacking in some way, and build yourself up to a point where you say, oh, I have my thing, they have their thing, and we're both good. And then that sense of jealousy will come away. But all of this, everything he's writing in this introduction, only works if you go on a date with your Yetzirah. That's it. The only way it's going to work. If you get to know yourself, you know what makes you tick, you know what's going on inside, only then is it be able to work out, be able to get to that level. Okay? Are there any questions? No. No questions at all.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm out.